Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My dad has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you already built your life, but now you need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So today I'm titling the text, Building the Mass. Building the Mass. I think a lot of stuff that happens to us and for us happens in a way that we could never have imagined. Have you ever prayed for something to happen or wished for something to happen or hoped for something to happen? And sometimes stuff happens that you didn't plan on happening for your good in a way that you never even dreamed. Let me share a silly story. Have you heard a story about a pastor who had a kitten that climbed up a tree in his backyard and then was afraid to come down? The pastor coaxed and offered warm milk, but the kitty would not come down, and the tree was not sturdy enough to climb. So the pastor decided that if he tied a rope to his car and drove away so that the tree bent down, he could then reach up and get the kitten. So you can imagine what this looked like, right? So that's what he did, all the while checking the progress in the car. He then figured if he went just a bit farther, then he could help reach that kitten a lot easier. But as he moved a little farther, the rope broke and the tree went bong, and the kitten instantly sailed through the air out of sight. So the pastor felt terrible, and he walked over to the neighborhood and walked all over the neighborhood looking for this kitten, and nobody had ever seen a stray kitten. So he prayed. He said, "Lord, I just commit this kitten to your keeping," and went on about his business. A few days later, he was at the grocery store and met one of the folks who attend his church, and he happened to look into their shopping cart and was amazed to see cat food. The woman was a cat hater, and everyone knew it. So he asked her, "Why are you buying cat food when you hate cats so much?" She replied, "You won't believe this," and then told him how her little girl had been begging her for a cat, but she kept refusing. Then a few days before, the child had started to beg some more, and so the mom finally told her, "Well, if God gives you a cat, I'll let you keep it." You know where the story's going, right? She continued, "I watched my child go out to the backyard, get down on her knees, and pray. And really, Pastor, if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, a kitten suddenly came flying out of a clear blue sky and landed right in front of her." So sometimes stuff happens for us and to our benefit that we had never imagined. But that's not the theme of the text today. I thought it was a very cute little story to start off with. Today I want to talk to you about building mass, M-A-S-S, in your life. Building mass. In Proverbs chapter number 24, Proverbs was written by a guy named Solomon. At the time he was extremely rich and extremely wise. And he had written down a bunch of smart stuff for all of us. But in one particular part in Proverbs chapter 24, he said, "If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small." If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Do you know how difficult it is to stay standing when you feel like falling on your face? Do you know how difficult it is to keep going when you feel like quitting and throwing in the towel and saying, "Forget it, maybe this is not for me"? I know I've been there probably dozens of times. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, the Apostle Paul, who was not a very nice man once upon a time and became a proponent of Christianity, in 1 Corinthians 9, starting in about verse 25, a paraphrase of the text says, You've all been to the stadium and seen athletes race. Everyone runs, but one wins. He says in a paraphrased form, run to win. All good athletes train hard. They do it for a goal that tarnishes and fades. You're after one that's gold eternally. He says, I don't know about you, but I'm running hard for the finish line. I'm giving it everything I've got. No sloppy living for me. I'm staying alert and in top condition. He says, I'm going to get caught. I'm not going to get caught napping, telling everyone else all about it, and then missing out on it myself. Of course, the King James says it a little more flowery than that. But the gist of it is that we have to keep going. We have to keep moving forward no matter what's coming down the line. A guy named Randy Pausch said, the brick walls are there for a reason. The brick walls are there for a reason. The brick walls are not there to keep us out. The brick walls are there to give us a chance to show how badly we want something. Let me repeat that last sentence. The brick walls are there to give us a chance to show how badly we want something. Because the brick walls are there to stop the people who don't want it badly enough. They're there to stop other people. How many times haven't you been tempted to look at the wall in your life, or look at the walls in your life, and look at the symbols or the signs that maybe you should stop as a sign to stop, instead of run through the wall? I know I have. I've looked at stuff and said, "Well, I can't possibly achieve this or do this or go there because of the walls or the encumbrances that try to stop me in our path." Right? T.S. Eliot says, "If you're not over your head, how do you know how tall you are?" Again, if you aren't in over your head, how do you know how tall you are? So many of us stop before we even reach our maximum because we're so intimidated by what could be or what roadblocks we're going to run across. A great sports athlete said one time, I don't run away from a challenge because I'm afraid. Instead, I run towards it because it's the only way to escape fear is to trample it beneath your foot. That is just the opposite of what most of us do. You've all heard that fear. You know, you run from fear or you fight it. Well, I would say probably 2/3 of people I know will run from stuff like that instead of run into it. You know, you have a great example of people who fight fires. Most of us would run out of a fire, and other people run into the fire. Or if you have bullets flying, most of us would run away from the bullets, whereas law enforcement runs toward it. It's a whole different mindset. So building one's strength doesn't happen alone. Again, building one's strength doesn't happen alone. It happens through consistent resistance. I'll say it again. Building one's strength doesn't happen alone. It happens through consistent resistance. And I don't know about you, but some days I just don't want to resist. I just want to go down the stream and just have life be very kind and cool and just sit back and relax and take it all in. But most days I get up, it's just not that way. You got to get up fighting. You got to get up kicking to keep moving forward. Susie Kasem writes, the true test of a warrior is how your stance holds up after any circumstance. I like that. The true test of a warrior is how your stance holds up after any circumstance, meaning even after the stormiest storm, a true warrior will still reflect the brilliant rays of the magnificent sun through both his or her eyes. She goes on to say that you may get hit by sudden lightning or take severe beatings by the cruel wind, but you will always get back up and stand strong on your feet again, soaking in the sunlight, and be prepared to get hit by even the most merciless hail time and time again. I don't know about you, but sometimes it's really difficult to get back out there in the storm again. When you've been poured on, when you've been struck by lightning and storms and thunder, all this over and over again, it is awful tempting to stay indoors, to stay away from that type of situation. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, it says, we're afflicted in every way, but not crushed. It says we're perplexed, but not despairing. Verse 9 in 2 Corinthians 4 says, we're persecuted, but not forsaken. We're struck down, but not destroyed. You know, there's not always, but there's a time when that persecution, that difficulty, that struggle stops, and that little window before it starts up again is our turn to really to get ramped up again, to put gasoline in the engine, to stay refueled at all times. Paul also says over in the book of Philippians, he says, I know how to be brought low and I know how to abound. He says, in every circumstance, I've learned, this is Paul talking. He says, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and facing hunger. He says, abundance and need. He says that I can do all things through him who gives me strength. We take that last verse, that Philippians 4:13, and stand on that, but we forget the part before it, where Paul says that I've been through much and I've been through struggle. You know what I'm saying? There's a Jewish term that says, I will not ask for a lighter burden, but for broader shoulders. That's not how I pray. I pray for a lighter burden. I don't know about y'all, but I pray sometimes that, Lord, I can't handle too much more. And then I look back 5 years ago, 10 years ago, what I'm handling now and what you're handling now, and you look back and say, you know what? I've been able to come through this by a lot of prayers, by a lot of people, by God's mercy, by staying in shape emotionally and all the other ways that you do. And then you look now and say, you know what? I'm going through some hard times, but I've been through hard times before. Have y'all been there before, that you look through your eyes now and you say, you know, I can't make it through this. But if you just stop and pause just a minute and say, and look back and say, you know what? I've been able to come through all these other areas that I thought that I couldn't make it. I thought that, you know, that was too difficult 3 years ago or 30 days ago or 6 years ago. I didn't think I could get through all this. And then now you look and say, I don't think I can get through this again. Well, guess what? You can, because you've gotten through all these other areas in your past. One of my favorite authors is a guy named Orison Swett Marden. And his prime time in his life was in the 1800s. And he published a number of books. And several quotes he has I want to share with you today. He says, wanted, now just let me pause. In that culture, these books were written to men. Because in that culture, women they stayed at home and they didn't do other things that, quote, men were designed to do. Don't take that the wrong way. But in that culture, it was a manly culture. So please read into these words. Wanted, a man who will not lose his individuality in a crowd, a man who has courage of his convictions, who is not afraid to say no, though all the world says yes. Again, today I'm talking about building our mass, our bulk. He also said, no man can be easily successful until he has found his place. Like a locomotive, he is strong on the track, but weak everywhere else. Isn't that an interesting picture I shared last week or two, that, you know, I thought that I had to be good at everything. Mm-hmm. But you only have to be really good at a few things in life and do very, very well. There's no way you can be good at everything. And then he said, success is not really thought about by what's accomplished, but by the opposition you have encountered and the courage with which you have maintained the struggle against overwhelming odds. It's so difficult to maintain struggle against overwhelming odds when you don't feel like facing the odds at all. You don't feel like putting your feet on the floor some mornings because you don't feel like what's going to happen or what you have to face that day. On an Australian coat of arms is a picture of an emu, or emu, I don't know how you say that exactly, and a kangaroo. Anyway, these animals were chosen because they share a characteristic that appealed to their founders. Both the emu and kangaroo can move only forward, not back. The emu's three-toed foot causes it to fall if it tries to go backwards, and the kangaroo is prevented from moving in reverse by its large tail. Sometimes I wish I had a large tail so I wouldn't be tempted or be able to move backwards. How many times haven't you gotten up at the end of the year and looked back and said, you know what, I haven't moved forward at all because I've been afraid, I've been intimidated, I've been challenged by what I think I can't do. Or maybe you looked in the mirror and said, no, there's no way that I can do the things that I feel like I should be called to do. You know, I obviously do homework on each text that I share. And there's this term that I was introduced to in the preparation for this text, and it's called progressive overload. And it's an exercise term that I don't really know many exercise terms until this text. But it really talks about increasing the intensity at a gym or at the gym when you're trying to build mass or build bulk. And this person who wrote this said that maybe you can increase the volume of the reps or gradually increase the weights that you're trying to achieve or do more in a shorter period of time. And that builds mass. And then we look at a guy named Jacob in the Old Testament. Now, Jacob was one of the founders of the Israeli part of the world. And if you want to turn over there to Genesis chapter 32, it shares a story. And that story is one that has been mirrored in a variety of ways over the centuries. And it can be viewed as not only a story that happened in Scripture, but maybe an allegory that can happen in our own lives right now. In Genesis chapter 32, starting, I think around verse 22, it says, "Now he arose that same night." Now, let me insert something before I continue. In that culture, it was common practice for men to have multiple wives. So please don't read into this text today that I'm encouraging us guys to go out and have multiple wives. That is not what I'm saying. It's just written in the Bible here. Genesis 32, verse 22. "Now he arose that same night and took two of his wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok." Verse 23. "He took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent them across whatever they had he had." Verse 24. "Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, 'Let me go, for the dawn is breaking.' But he said, 'I will not let go unless you bless me.'" Verse 27. "So he said to him, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Jacob.' And he said, 'Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed.'" Verse 29. "Then Jacob asked him and said, 'Please tell me your name.' But he said, 'Why is it that you ask my name?' And he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Peniel. And he said, 'I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved.' Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh in the sinew of his hip." Now this imagery, this story, really echoes to me that we get stuff the longer we hang on. Because if Jacob would have let go, if Jacob would have said, "Okay, the day's breaking because God says, I can't stay here now," and he's got to go. The whole point is that he hung on until. Oftentimes it's really tempting for us to let go just before our breakthrough happens. How many people do you know in your own life, or maybe assume in your own life, who've let go just before the dawn, in quotes, in their life breaks through and their miracles start happening because they get tired of the struggle. They get tired of building the mass. They get tired of the fight. They get tired of the wrestling match. They get tired of the pain and the agony of doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting things to change. But if someone told me, not that long ago, I used to look at that as a definition of what? Insanity. However, it's actually probably not. Because those people who do the same thing over and over again will get change if they keep doing the same thing, the right thing, I should say, over and over again. That's how stuff is done. I read a story a while back. It says, one day on a dull and exhausted by his illnesses and the burdens of life, a peasant came to the wise man. He sat in front of the wise man, and who gave him a heartfelt and warm smile. So the peasant breathed out heavily, letting out a wave of mourning, and he began complaining about his life. And he had a hard burden that he doesn't see a bright daylight at all. It's like one problem falls on his head or another. They've twisted him between the grindstones so much that he can't even breathe some fresh air, the story says. Later, he began blaming all his relatives who, in his opinion, were guilty for his misfortunes, whether the circumstances didn't turn out right for him or something else. So the wise man just listened to him whine in silence, and the peasant once again inquired to the wise man, why is it so unfair? Who, in his opinion, were, you know, everybody else was being blessed except him. Then he came out of the hut and went to the lakeside, which is not far away from where he goes from time to time. He goes fly fishing, and he sees these fish jumping and trotting fast above the surface of the water, catching food. And the wise man led the peasant to the lakeside and said to him, do you see the smoothness of this lake? The depths are full of life. There are fishes that always stay in the water, and if suddenly the lake got polluted, they couldn't see further than their own nose. They would hardly recognize where the source of the pollution was, and they would keep swimming in circles. And then, he says, there are also fishes that got wings, and they can rise above the water of the lake, looking at it from the heights from above. So this is my advice, he said. Instead of complaining about your life, come to this situation, to this lakeside from time to time. Watch the flying fishes and try to understand what I want to say to you. Sometimes it's hard to get above the stuff. Have you ever been in the stuff so deep that you think everybody's in the stuff too? That everybody's dealing with the same stuff, but everybody's really not dealing with the same stuff at all? Over in Acts 4, there's a story about some people that were being really intimidated by the public. Let me just share it with you. Over in Acts 4, starting in verse 18 or so. And when they summoned them, they commanded them not to speak or teach at all in the name of Jesus. I'm in Acts 4, verse 18. We're now verse 19. But Peter and John answered and said to them, whatever, whether it's right or in the sight of God, to give heed to you rather than to God, you be the judge. For we cannot stop speaking about what we have seen and heard. How many times haven't you been threatened or intimidated or asked to keep your mouth shut about what's right? Because the culture, because the workplace, because the family, because the friends are doing all the stuff that is, maybe some of the people are not doing the right thing. And the temptation is to keep your mouth shut in the middle of the environment that you're placed in. Whereas Peter and John clearly said again, whether it is right in the sight of God to give heed to you rather than to God, you be the judge, for we cannot stop speaking about what we have seen and heard. And then if you skip down to Acts chapter 5, verse 27, it says, when they had brought them, they stood them before the group, and the high priest questioned them, saying, we gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in his name, and yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this good man's blood upon us. Again, but Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men. It's so tempting to keep your mouth shut when the culture is standing against what you're trying to get across. Sherry Proskine writes, many years ago, a man was sailing from Ireland to England. And as the ship entered the harbor in the evening, all that could be seen was a confusing array of lights. He wondered how the captain could hope to navigate to the harbor safely with such confusion. So he asked him. The captain took him up on the top of the bridge. He says, it's really very simple. I'll show you how I do it. Do you see that big light over to the left? And do you see that other big light over there to the right of it? And now do you see that outstanding light farther still out the way? Well, keep your eyes on those three lights and see what happens. As the man watched, the big outer light on the left gradually moved in until it coincided with the middle one. Then as the ship turned, the light gradually merged into the other light. There now, said the captain. All I have to do is to see that those three big lights become one. Then I go straight forward. The believer also has three lights to guide him in the will of God, the storyteller says. When scripture and coincidence and conscience are all lined up with outward circumstances so that the three become one, we need no fear. We can go straight ahead. I don't know about you in your life, but definitely in my life, I look for signs. I look for messages and maybe nudges and maybe things around me that if I wasn't paying attention to, I would ignore them, because signs are all around us, telling us, maybe encouraging us or whispering to us in a variety of ways that we should go this way or that way. Michael Jordan once said, obstacles don't have to stop you. If you run into walls, don't turn around and give up. Figure out how to climb it, go through it, or work around it. Today, again, the text is talking about building mass. You're not going to build mass unless you have resistance, unless you and I place resistance in our lives, unless you and I allow resistance to be in our lives. And I'll say it multiple times today. Some days I don't feel like dealing with resistance. I don't feel like dealing with pressure. I don't feel like dealing with stuff that's heavy. I don't feel like carrying things that are beyond what I think I can handle. But that's how mass is built. That's how you've been able to overcome the stuff that you've been able to overcome all these years. You've built up mass over the years. Over in Genesis chapter 39, it talks about a guy named Joseph. Joseph was an interesting story there. Hold on a second. So in Genesis 39, in about verse 20, let me just set the scene. Joseph was a son. He had a lot of brothers, and he created some jealousy between him and his brothers. Longer story short, Joseph ended up in jail for something that he didn't do. So in Genesis 39, starting at about verse 20, it says, so Joseph's master took him and put him into the jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the jail. But listen, the story says, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Now, if I were God, this world would be a different place. Good people wouldn't have difficulties. Good people wouldn't be sitting in jail like Joseph had to go through. Good people wouldn't have diseases. Good people wouldn't go through other struggles that they shouldn't go through if I was God. But I'm not God. I go back to the story. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Here's how I see life these days. And I will probably not see it the same way tomorrow, or next year, or in 5 years from now. I can probably guarantee you that. But I can see that God does stuff in the middle of our stuff, in the middle of our struggles, in the middle of our pain, in the middle of our disappointments, in the middle of the pressure and the stress and the building of mass that we are trying to accomplish in our lives. God gets through it with us and enables us to get blessed in the middle of the stuff. Don't ask me to repeat that again. So Joseph was eventually elevated to a point that he saved an entire country because God was with him in the middle of the stuff that he didn't really ask for.
That's right.
Again, I'll say it 3 or 4 times. I wouldn't have done it that way. I just wouldn't have. I wouldn't have, but I'm not God. In 1 Peter, it says this, this means tremendous joy to you, I know, even though you are temporarily harassed by all kinds of trials and temptations. This is no accident. This is Peter talking. It happens to prove your faith, which is infinitely more valuable than gold. You know, when you become a Christian, if you choose to become a Christian, it's not a cakewalk at all. It is hard work because, you know, you would think that, you know, you ask God to forgive you of all your sins and, you know, life is different. You see things from a new set of glasses. But it's a whole different journey because everything you do, it seems that you're challenged in a variety of ways. And those areas of rest, the longer you're a Christian, get shorter. I mean, for a period of time, you become a Christian and everything's great. Everything's moving really well. And then you have a hiccup. And then you have to deal with that hiccup. And that hiccup might last for 30 days, let's say. Well, the longer you're a Christian, those hiccups, those struggles, those difficulties happen more often. Hence, you're building mass. You're building muscle in the middle of this journey. So that walk, that environment that all of us, or at least some of us, choose to be in, is a daily exercise, is a daily struggle, which isn't always fun. I don't know about you all, but I would rather sometimes just have a year of just rest. Just a year. That's all I'm asking for. Just a year of no difficulty, no trouble at all. But that's not how it works. Leon Leeson chose to rebuild his life after the Holocaust. Recently, the story says, the extraordinary man Leon passed away at the age of 83. Here's the story of how he overcame hard times. Leon was 9 years old when Germany invaded Poland in 1939. His quiet life in Poland changed forever when he and his family were taken from their home and sent to Krakow, Poland. Leon survived as mass killings and deportations and concentration camps increased. Two of his brothers were killed during the Holocaust. Leon became the youngest of the workers that Schindler, an industrialist, saved by declaring them vital for the factory work. The work was tough. Schindler doubled Leon's rations because Leon was weak from hunger. Leon was so short that he had to stand on a box to work for these people. The war, Leon spent 3 years in a displacement camp in Germany. He moved to the United States and several years after that and served in the Army. He went on to receive a master's degree in education and work as an industrial arts teacher at a California high school for 39 years before retiring. But after the 1993 movie Schindler's List revived interest in the story, Leon began public speaking across the United States. Leon was determined not to live in the past. Leon was determined not to live in the past. He found ways to put his horrific experiences behind him and build a new life for himself. So in 1997, Leon told the Portland Oregonian, which is a newspaper, he says, quote, "The truth is, I did not live my life in the shadow of the Holocaust." Again, the truth is, I did not live my life in the shadow of the Holocaust. I did not give my children a legacy of fear. I gave them a legacy of freedom. Talk about reframing the stuff that you've been through in your life. How tempting it is for all of us to live in the struggle and the pain of yesterday. How many people do you know are still blaming the pain of the past for what they're dealing with today? Stuff that happened 10 years ago, sometimes 25 years ago. They're still dealing. They still choose to pick up that struggle. They still choose to pick up that pain and use that pain as a tool to not move forward. Now, there's another story in the Bible. There's so many stories in the Bible. But the first king of Israel was a guy named Saul, S-A-U-L. And Saul had a son by the name of Jonathan. And there's a very interesting story that I want to share with you in 1 Samuel chapter number 13. 1 Samuel chapter 13. And Jonathan was no sissy by any stretch. Jonathan saw an opportunity because his people, his culture, his group were being attacked by the Philistines, which were a warring group of people. So you would think that Saul and or Jonathan would have the regular soldiers go out and do certain things to take down these armies. Well, in this story, it didn't quite happen that way. In 1 Samuel chapter number 23, it talks about, chapter number 13, it talks about how Jonathan and his armor bearer chose to attack them by themselves. If you skip down to 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting in verse 12, it says this. This is Jonathan talking. "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, with his armor bearer behind him, and they fell before Jonathan. That is, that Jonathan and the armor bearer took down this garrison of these warriors by themselves because they chose to do something differently. In other words, they climbed up to a higher place to see more and to do things a different way. How many times do we do things the same way? And we go back to what I just shared earlier. And maybe there's times when maybe we need to tweak a little bit to see a little bit better. Maybe we need to step up. And maybe we need to place ourselves in some scary places for us to see opportunities to do things that we've never done before. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm talking to me today more so than you. I don't know. But maybe, again, we need to place ourselves in situations that are intimidating, that are scary, that maybe other people haven't done it that way before, for you to see an opportunity to do things that you've never done in the past. So in fact, the whole story talks about that they got out of their box. They redesigned, actually, if you will, how battling was done in that culture. Because in that culture, they came on at each other straight ahead. Well, that's not what Jonathan and his armor bearer said. So in 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 6, he said, perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord, listen, is not restrained to save by many or by few. Now that little scripture verse kind of grabbed me somewhat, where it says that there's no one way that God chooses to do stuff in our lives. Sometimes God does great things with just a few people or maybe one, and maybe sometimes God does great things with a bunch of people. But there's no one way that God does it all the time. Rick Warren writes, in order to build your faith, God will give you a dream. Then he'll urge you to make a decision. Then he'll allow a delay. Listen to this. This is difficult for most of us. Because in the delay, he matures you and prepares you for what is to come. In the delay. The truth is, he says, you'll have difficulties while God delays. This isn't because he doesn't care about you or that he's forgotten your circumstances. Rather, it's one of the ways he pushes you toward the deep end of your faith in the delays he's talking about. As God delays, he says, you'll face two types of difficulties, circumstances and critics. This is a natural part of life, he says. God designed it this way because he knows we grow stronger. Listen, when facing adversity and opposition. David, he says, was anointed king. And then for the next several years, he was hunted down by Saul. We just talked about Saul moments ago. Joseph had a dream of becoming a ruler, yet he was sold into slavery and thrown into prison on a false charge where he languished and he was forgotten. Imagine the difficulties Noah had building a floating zoo. Stuff happens that we wouldn't choose to do it that way. But in those delays, that's where the muscle is built. That's where the mass is built. That's where the faith is extended. I don't like it. I'll be first to tell you. I hate delays. But that's another sermon. Now, the Old Testament of the Bible is very different than the New Testament of the Bible. In fact, you would think that it's from two different gods. And I say that respectfully. There's a story about a guy named Barak, not Obama, but a guy named Barak, that talks about in Judges chapter 4 how he was asked to do a certain task, and that is to take down a group of bad people. But he was slightly intimidated by it. And then in that culture, there was a prophetess. Let me just go there. In Judges 4, starting verse 8, Barak said to her, if you will go with me. Now, Deborah was a holy person in that culture. So Deborah is telling Barak, you need to go and do this big task. But Barak said this, if you will go with me, I will go. But if you don't, I won't go. I'm in Judges 4:8. Certainly I will go with you, said Deborah. But because of the course you're taking, listen, the honor will not be yours, for the Lord will deliver this town into your hands of a woman. So Deborah went with Barak to Kadesh. Verse skip down to verse 14. Then Deborah said to Barak, "Go, this is the day the Lord has given this town into your hands. Has not the Lord gone ahead of you?" So Barak went down to the Mount of Tabor and with 10,000 men following him. At Barak's advance, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and army by the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled on foot. Then Barak pursued the chariots and army as far as this town and that town, and all the troops fell by the sword, and not a man was left. Now, the context of the story where I'm trying to get to is that Barak's pride was challenged because Deborah was smart enough to say, you know what, if I lead this, then the woman's going to get all the credit. And in that culture, that wasn't cool. So Barak had to be encouraged. He had to be prompted. He had to be prodded to step up and do the stuff that he should have been doing anyway. I wonder how many of us sometimes need to be embarrassed to do stuff that we know that we can do in the first place, or challenged to do the stuff that we need to do in the first place. Now, again, the Old Testament and the New Testament are like two different parts of the same household. But in Matthew chapter 5, this is a whole different concept. Matthew 5, starting in verse 38, says, "You've heard what was told, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." That's like the concept of the Old Testament. So Jesus comes on the scene and says, look, we're going to write a New Testament, a new way of doing stuff. He says, "But I say to you, don't resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other one also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too." I'm still talking about building mass. I'm still talking about building strength in your life. This is tough for me. I think it's tough for a lot of people. When Jesus says, look, if somebody slaps you, turn your face and give them the other cheek to slap. I'm not there. I'm going to punch you in the face. You know what I'm saying? I'm not where I need to be. I would suggest that some of us are not where we need to be. But this is where Jesus says that this is where you build your mass. By going above and beyond what your humanity says that you should do. In Matthew 5, starting in verse 43, it says, "You've heard it that it was said, you shall love your neighbor," I'm in Matthew 5, 43, "and hate your enemy." Again, it's been said that you love your neighbor, hate your enemy. "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, for he causes the sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and to send rain to the righteous and the unrighteous." I'm still definitely building mass in that arena. Loving my neighbor, I mean, that's easy. But loving my enemy, to embrace, man, I have a long way to go. And then Paul says in his beautiful way, he says, "Don't be conformed to the world, but be transformed by," you know, switching how things are going around in your head. That's my paraphrase. Scripture says to transform by the renewing of your mind, to do what's acceptable and holy in God's eyes. Mm-hmm. Building mass isn't easy. I don't even know how else to even explain it, except it's hard work. It's getting in a situation, and let me say it a different way. It's placing yourself in a situation that you know you're going to be challenged to work your behind off, to build the mass, when you really don't want to be there. But you are there in the situation. You place yourself in the situation because if you're not there, then you know you're not going to build the mass that you need. Mm-hmm. I've said it over the pulpit a few times. I'll say it again just for the sake of those who haven't heard it. And that is, there's been many times when I would go to the gym and I didn't feel like going to the gym. And lately, in the last 2 or 3 months, I've been sharing that publicly at the gym. Man, this is really a hard day for me. This is a difficult day because I can't lift what I lifted 2 days ago or 3 days ago. And then I'm hearing, as I said it, this guy will speak, yeah, I'm saying that, this woman will say, oh yeah, so it's not me. So if it's not only me, then it's other people too. So, but guess what? It would be easy not to go. It would be easier not to go, but you know that you're not going to build mass if you don't go, unless you place yourself in a situation and challenge yourself to keep lifting, to keep pushing, to keep fighting until you reach a point that you know that you've pushed past that That attitude of, I can't do it, or I'm too tired to do it, or this is a rough day. Let me end with a story. The story says, don't look back. As you travel through life, there are always those times when decisions just have to be made. When the choices are hard and solutions seem scarce and the rain seems to soak your parade. There are times, there are some situations where all you can do is simply let go and move on, gather courage together, and choose a direction that carries you toward a new dawn. So pack up all your troubles and take a step forward. The process of change can be tough, but think about all the excitement ahead. If you can stalwart enough, there could be adventures you never imagined just wait around the next bend and wishes and dreams just about to come true in ways you can't yet comprehend. Perhaps you'll find friendships that spring from new interests as you challenge your status quo and learn there are so many options in life and so many ways you can grow. Perhaps you'll go places you never expected and see things that you've never seen, or travel to fabulous faraway worlds and wonderful spots in between. Perhaps you'll find warmth, affection, and caring, and somebody special who's there to help you stay centered and listen with interest to stories and feelings that you will share. Perhaps you'll find comfort in knowing your friends and supportive of all that you do, and believe that whatever decisions you make, they'll be the right choices for you. So it ends with, keep putting one foot in front of the other and taking your life day by day. There's a brighter tomorrow that's just down the road, so don't look back. You're not going that way. So your mass and my mass, your strength is built through resistance. So go after what is difficult and hard, and watch your strength go up. Watch your tenacity go up. Watch your endurance go up. Because if other people can do it, whatever it is, if there's other people who've done it before you, you can do it too. That if there's one thing that I can end with that has kept me going, partly, is other people have gone through it, done it, exceeded that, and they've done well. So they're no smarter, no prettier, no uglier, no richer, no poorer than me. They've just stuck with it longer than me. They got started before me, and they chose not to stop. So if it worked for them and still works for them, then it must be able to work for you and me too. That's what's kept me going down the roads that I've been going. So I'm hoping that that little bit of advice will help you to keep going too. I'll say it for the second and last time. If other people have done it, and have done it well, and made it, then you can make it too. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots,
Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you.
Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.